to your life. No bad language, please.
Don't say that, Davina.
Hello and welcome to part three of our series, all about psychological flexibility and how you can develop it. My name is Dr. Richard McKinnon. I'm a chartered psychologist and coach, and I'm joined by my colleague and partner in crime, Ross McIntosh. Ross, how are you doing today?
Howdy, partner. I'm good, thanks, Richard. And I, too, an organizational psychologist and coach, and chuffed to get on with this bit, actually.
Fantastic. I'm really enjoying these recordings with you. And if it's not obvious, I'm also learning a lot in how we're talking this through. It really, really brings it to life. So thank you very much. So what are we going to talk about in this episode?
We're going to be taking a pause and thinking about our thoughts, particularly how we can develop a new relationship with our thoughts. And if that sounds a bit woo-woo, don't worry, because we're going to unpick that. When we talk about relationship thoughts, it might sound a bit unusual, but we're going to be considering the nature of our thoughts, just how many we experience every day for a start. And not only thoughts, we also experience emotions, memories, sensations, urges. And how we relate to them is super important. We decide to do with them can have a huge impact on our behavior and what we do next.
And last time we talked about the power of noticing and being present in the moment. And a point that comes up all the time is, that's all very well, but what if I don't like what I notice? And so today is all about this skill of learning how you can not like the stuff your mind gives you and continue at the same time. You don't have to do anything with that. You don't have to deal with that stuff. You can, as Ross said, cultivate a new relationship with it where it's not as grabby or sticky or loud, but it's just another thought, which is what this all boils down to, really.
Yeah, I love the language you use about sticky and grabby and tangled, because that's how it can feel as a human. We can get really immersed in those thoughts and treat them as if they're like 100% true or 100% worthy of our full attention.
And we talked about daydreaming last time and how that's lovely. It's really nice to get lost in, you know, nice thoughts. But we can also get tangled up in thoughts about stuff that either has happened in the past or hasn't happened yet. And we can all identify with that feeling that we're struggling with that to the extent that it's taking us away from the here and now, that we're really living in an internal mental life to the detriment of the physical world around us and those people and tasks and activities that we'd ideally like to be fully engaged with. Because sometimes we want to exert some control over those inner experiences, or sometimes called private experiences, because only I can experience them. I can tell you about them, but that's not the same as you experiencing my memory. So they're going on inside of me, and I might try and control them, minimize them, push them away, change them. And of course, we've all tried that, but we all know it's impossible not to think of something once you've thought of it. It's impossible to, you know, remove a memory the way that you would delete a file on your computer. Our minds just don't work that way. So fundamental, this whole skill set is learning how to maybe step away from those automatic responses, those learned responses to the thoughts we don't like, and try something kind of radically different, which is to end the struggle with them.
Love how you described about deleting a file from your computer. I'm going to use a mechanical analogy too. And this has just popped into my head. But bear with. If you have your car and it's not functioning very well, and you take it to the garage and you find out it needs new spark plugs. Hark at me talking about spark plugs. And so the mechanic takes out the old spark plugs and puts a new one. The car doesn't remember, the engine doesn't remember the old spark plugs and that memory of them. But it's not the same thing that happens in our minds. We've got the memory of past thoughts and those memories of when things didn't go well last time. And we can use them as a guide and perhaps limit ourselves. Perhaps, quite often, in fact, limit ourselves.
Mm.
And society can teach us that we can get rid of, oh, cheer up. Turn that frown upside down, Richard, young man. All sorts of, oh, don't worry.
Those things we say to calm down. Yeah.
Those things we say to each other and ourselves, they're not effective strategies for us.
You know, the way that it amazes me that we have this rich inner life, and yet we don't really get taught the skills of how to navigate it. You know, we don't have conversations about, just because you've imagined that, it doesn't make you a bad person. Just because you have that memory, it doesn't mean you have to sit with it and let it play out for the next 15 minutes. Just because you have that thought about yourself, it doesn't mean it's true. This sort of societal, at least Western society, belief is you should remove that. You should suppress that. Or you should replace that bad thought with a good thought, which again, we know doesn't work because all we're doing is linking the so-called bad thought with the good thought and making a very strong association between them. So a lot of what we're taught or a lot of what is expected of us really flies in the face of our well-being and our capacity to navigate this stuff that our own mind is giving us. There's a real irony in that.
And you're absolutely right. I think these skills that I certainly wasn't taught in my education or my further training and degrees. And I don't know about you, Richard. Sometimes when I share this idea that we can change the relationship with our thoughts, and particularly perhaps using a metaphor, people are saying to me, oh, I thought it was just me I had these thoughts.
Mm.
No, they hadn't actually vocalized this with anyone else in their lives before. And it's kind of like, my goodness, we need to spread the word further and faster.
At the risk of incurring the wrath of purists, I would say that this skill that we're going to talk about today, this skill of cognitive diffusion, is so impactful. In fact, possibly the most impactful element of what we're going to be talking about because of our shared human experience of from time to time being pulled back or dragged down or prevented by acting by our own thoughts. What potential could we unleash in everyone if everyone understood that it's just a thought? It's not a restriction. It's not an ultimatum. It's not a command. It's just another piece of mental stuff. Flotsam floating through my awareness.
Beautiful. So we've mentioned this word diffusion. And I wonder if we could unpack that, because this diffusion is about changing our relationship, isn't it?
It is. And this is one of those words that it's useful to explain what it is because it doesn't technically exist in English in the way that we're using it. You know, people don't go around talking about diffusion. And in fact, if you start to write this, your computer will probably automatically correct it to delusion, which is, again, a not very commonly used word. But what we're talking about here, and I like the way I think it was Russ Harris described it, that we're learning how to see our thoughts for what they actually are, not what they say they are. So many of our thoughts don't present themselves in any sort of timid or tentative way. They sound like facts. They sound like commands. They sound like ultimate truth. But diffusion allows us to take a step back metaphorically and go, is it really? Do I need to? Must that always be that way? And you're not even necessarily deal with each of these thoughts, but instead I use a lot of physical metaphors. It's sort of keep your hands by your sides. Keep your hands out of the machinery. Don't try and do anything with them because they're going to move along. And we all have that experience. That's something that everyone can identify with. Once one thought has moved along, there will be another to replace it and another one after that. This constant stream of consciousness that we experience. And so we're moving away from any attempts to control, minimize, remove, or alter our thoughts. And we're keeping our hands away and just letting it go on its merry way. That is so different to control attempts, removal attempts, replacement attempts. And probably before we go any further, it's worth just broadening this out a little bit to make the point that in ACT terms, acceptance and commitment theory terms, we can use the word thinking to describe all that mental content, rather than getting super specific about the difference between all these things. Images, it's memories, it's predictions, it's ideas, reminders, self-talk. We can refer to that as thinking. And that can be really helpful, as we'll see a little bit later on when we're practicing this skill, you know, to see it all as, well, that's thinking as opposed to doing outside of me or hearing from outside of me. That's going on inside of me. And that distinction is a really important one to make. But does that make sense? And if we view it as a skill, why would we want to learn it in the first place?
Yeah, I love that. And I love your idea of getting physical and keeping your hands out of the machinery. And I'd also use my hands just to talk about why we want to do this. So for those of you watching on video, I'm waving my left hand and saying, that's me. And I'm waving my right hand and saying, that's that unhelpful stuff. That's that thinking, that thoughts that my mind generates. And quite often we're like this. And what I've done there, for those listening on audio, is I've clasped my hands tightly together. And they're like glued together. And if I try and struggle to get them apart, that bond actually gets stronger. What we're trying to do with these skills, these techniques, is we're trying to get a bit of space between ourselves, that's the left hand, and that unhelpful stuff in our mind. So I've just separated my hands again, and I'm now wiggling my thumbs towards each other. And that space where my thumbs are wiggling between me and that content, that's some of the healthiest psychological space we can have. And for me, that kind of, I don't know if that's landed, but for me, that kind of represents why we would want to do this.
I love that, because I'm thinking of workshops in the past and even one-to-one coaching sessions where I've used that clasped hands thing to explain where defusion comes from, because that's fusion. You know, we talked about it briefly in our very first episode, the way that we can pay more attention to thoughts than they deserve. We can buy into them as truths when they don't really deserve that. And we're fusing with them. They're taking maybe too much of our attention, too much of our energy, shall we say. And defusion is that, but still having them. This is a really important point. We still have the thoughts. We're not getting rid of them. We still have them. We've got that space between us and them. In fact, we're becoming aware of them in a different way. We're looking at the thoughts, not through the thoughts. I think that's another Russ Harris way of explaining it, in the sense that, you know, if you took off your glasses, you would still have your glasses. You just wouldn't be looking through them. And therefore, the world would look quite different. And you, once you realize you can have thoughts and not need to do anything with them, boy, it really frees up an awful lot of attention and energy and capacity, because there's no more struggle. There's no more need to solve these thoughts or process them or work at changing them into something more pleasant or something nicer. You don't need to do anything to them.
This is one of the things that really attracted me about ACT in the very early days. This idea that we're having these thoughts, we're experiencing these thoughts, which are generated because it's our mind doing what it evolved to do to keep us safe, except the context we now operate in is very different to the context we lived in when we lived in caves. So when our minds generate these thoughts, they're doing exactly what our minds have evolved to do. We're not broken. We don't need fixing. And this is one of the things that really attracted me to ACT, is that it's part of the human experience to have these thoughts that are, they're not good, bad, what we like to call them, is helpful or unhelpful in any given context.
So these thoughts often present themselves with a sense of urgency or fact, or like I said earlier, an ultimatum. And I think we can all identify with things that we don't want to experience mentally, like thoughts about ourselves and our abilities, or how likable we are, or how successful we are, or thoughts about the future. We talked about catastrophization previously, and sometimes our tendency to see terrible disasters in the future. And what we're missing there is the capacity to step past that and see actually something could be difficult or uncomfortable or ambiguous, but that's not a catastrophe. That's not danger. That's not a threat. It's just something that we might not enjoy. And learning to see that we're being given this content by our minds, that's a very strange phrase. But the opposite to that is when we just identify with our thoughts. I am my thoughts. Well, that means that every thought I have that isn't a very nice thought means I'm not a very nice person. Whereas if we can frame things as my mind is a thing, it's evolved to keep me safe, and it's giving me stuff. It's giving me mental content. It's giving me messages. What I do with them is up to me. And sometimes I might just take them and put them over here and crack on with what I was doing anyway. So if we're able to start, and listeners and viewers, this is something you can start with, is where is my mind and what is it giving me, rather than I am everything I experience mentally. And that can really open people's eyes to, okay, there's a different way of thinking about my own thinking. There's a different way of looking at it. And instead of I'm the recipient who must process and deal with, it's I've got a choice. And that's nice, isn't it?
It's beautiful. And yeah, it gives us that choice, and it frees us up to appreciate and observe different perspectives on maybe something we've been struggling with, been so deeply ingrained in the way we think that we can't see the wood for the tree.
In coaching contexts, this becomes really, really relevant in situations where someone begins the process by saying, I want more confidence. You know, I want to be a more confident person at work. And inevitably we'll get to an exploration of what is it you're hearing? What is it you're thinking about yourself? And a focus on that means that we don't end up doing what many people think we do, which might be standing on a chair and role-playing giving a presentation or adopting some kind of confident body language, but instead we're saying, well, that's just a thought about you. Doesn't mean it's true. Doesn't mean you have to listen to it. And it doesn't mean you have to get rid of it. It's just noise. Let's focus on what you would like to do if confidence weren't part of this. If you didn't know the word existed, what would you be doing? And it reframes the whole thing. Instead of, I need to feel confident before I can do this thing, or I'm going to somehow conjure up confidence. Then, no, what would I do? And then, of course, confidence will come after doing it. But seeing the thoughts about myself that hold me back, that criticize me, or that are full of fear of failure, I can, instead of, I need to deal with the fear of failure, to see, well, it's just a thought. And actually, if I do nothing to it, it's going to move along. And then there'll be another thought, probably about dinner. And then there'll be another thought about my commute, and so on, and so on. And that's why I argue this is so powerful, that teaching people diffusion-based skills frees them up to do more of what's really important to them, removes the need to wrestle with the stuff that our mind gives us that we don't really like. And this philosophical shift, we talk about light bulb moments in coaching a lot, but I've seen more light bulb moments on this topic than all the others put together, when someone goes, it's just a thought. And that's a thought too. And that memory's a thought. And that story I tell myself about me, that's a thought as well. So I don't need to do anything with them. That is one of the things that brings me the most satisfaction as a practitioner. So that's why I'm passionate about this, because whether it's ruminating over the past, being fearful over the future, criticizing myself, being judgmental about other people, thoughts, it's all thoughts. And this skill, therefore, is generalizable to all of these situations. All of these moments where our mind gives us something that's not particularly palatable.
Hearing you describe this, it kind of blows my mind all over again. just to hear someone else say it. Mm. And I know this, and I practice these skills. But it's just such an important message. This idea that the thoughts, thought is just a thought.
And if, listener, you decide to stop here, you've just heard diffusion in one sentence. A thought is just a thought. Using that as your mantra is a fantastic start. And bringing that to your awareness when upset, worried, stuck, stopped in your tracks, a thought is just a thought, can really give you pause to realize, what am I basing my next action on? Is it something happening in the room? Is it something on the screen? Or is it something up here that is just a thought? And do I need to give it the attention it's asking for? But we do want to give you more to work with. But if that's all you heard, that's a really, really good start.
Yeah, but don't go just yet. Because I want to share how I would introduce these skills in group work. Because again, I use these in one-to-one coaching, but also in group work. And again, sometimes it's a privilege to see someone going, oh my God. When they get this really simple concept, realize the potential it has to transform their lives and unleash their potential. So let me get practical. Sometimes I will just invite people to write down their everyday unhelpful thoughts. Just write them down on a piece of paper. Let me give you some examples from me. So some of my everyday unhelpful thoughts that are still with me are, I'm not clever enough. I'm going to be discovered. And I don't mean in like an X Factor way. I mean like, I'm going to be discovered for the fraud and the charlatan that I am. What will people think of me? That's another one that infuses every part of my life. I was just saying to Richard earlier, I've joined a new gym. And I don't feel that confident entering that environment. I feel I'm looking at these very fit Spanish men and women and thinking, oh my God, what must they be thinking of me? And it really helps me play with these thoughts. So writing them down. So you might want to just try that. And looking at them out there on the page can help us start to get that distance between us and those unhelpful thoughts. And sometimes people will say to me, oh, you've got me to write them down, and they feel even more concrete than they did. Thanks, mate. And in response to that, I don't know if you've ever had that sort of response, Richard, but I would say, well, stick with it. Stick with it. If you're willing to, let's just sit with them a bit longer and maybe try some of these other techniques I'm going to share. Because yeah, it could be just the mind playing more tricks. I don't know if you've come across that before, Richard.
So this is probably a good point to drop in right now, which is, I don't think there's one size fits all solution when it comes to diffusion skills. And depending on who you are as a person, some of these resonate with you more than others. But let's remember what we said earlier. Diffusion is not about getting rid of the stuff we don't like. It'll still be there. We're not paying as much attention to it. The writing it down, where I've done that with groups, it seems to work more powerfully when people don't put thought into it, but write it verbatim. So don't write about the thought. Write the thought, the words, you know, I'm not good enough, rather than that's a self-critical thought. No, I'm not good enough is something you can then use in the other exercises we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, lovely. And also some people say, when I see it out there on the page, it looks a bit daft, or it looks a bit humorous, looks a bit silly. And sometimes people will say it's almost like it uses juvenile language. And at that point, I'd ask people, just reflect, how long have these thoughts been around? And it's not universal, but typically some people will say, oh, since I was a kid. And at that point, it's just useful to say, well, is it time that we could think about changing our relationship with that thought? Because it seems to be limiting you in some way. And a couple I've got a couple more, actually.
Mm.
I'm going to save one till the end, I think. But I'm going to share with you another one that I typically share in group situations. And that's a playful nickname for the mind. Now, listen to those words, a playful. We're not looking to criticize our mind, saying, oh, you're terrible, you're so blooming annoying, you're a dreadful piece of work. The reason we're saying a playful nickname for the mind is because, as I said earlier, our minds are doing exactly what they evolved to do, keeping us safe. So they're not getting it entirely right, but they're doing what they were designed and evolved to do. So let me give you an example. A playful nickname for my mind. Remember, I think I told you in one of the previous episodes that I'm a catastrophizer. I come from a long line of catastrophizers. And I can escalate a minor incident to catastrophe in nanoseconds. And I do. So I call my mind the head of drama. Why do I give it that nickname? Well, it's because if I can notice my mind kind of in flight, going down this route of, oh my God, look what's going to happen. If I can catch it in that moment, I can say to myself, oh, there you are again, head of drama. And that kind of gives me that space and frees me up to do some other stuff. And I'll give you another example. My dear friend and colleague, Paul Flaxman, he calls his mind the caution calculator. And the way he would typically illustrate that, and I do have permission to do this, probably I'm slightly more dramatic than he is. No shit. But he would say the caution calculator. Say he wants to take his wife to the theater. A beautiful thing to do for your spouse. So he's on his laptop looking for tickets, and he thinks, ah, we could go for a meal as well. And that wouldn't that be a lovely whole evening experience? And then his caution calculator kicks in. And I'll keep this brief, but what if we're late into town and the service is slow in the restaurant, and then we have to wolf down our food, then run to the theatre, and they've already closed the doors, or they let us in and everyone looks around and goes, shh, and we have a big row. That's what his mind is throwing up. And what does he do next? It's really important to think what we do next when we're gripped by these thoughts. What does he do next? He steps away from the laptop and doesn't book anything because his caution calculator has taken control. So that's why we both really feel the importance of this part of the hexaflex is getting that distance between the helpful content our minds produce can really free us up, like Richard said, our energy and our attention to pursue what really matters and is meaningful to us.
I love that for a few reasons, but one of them is, I hope everyone got it, was we can be really playful and creative when it comes to diffusion. And I think a lot of my clients value that. Yes, if you imagine coaching to be me sitting opposite a middle-aged man in a suit in a bank, okay, yes, that could happen. But I'm just as likely to be working with someone from a creative studio who spends their day creating visual effects for a movie. And so when we are giving people license to be creative in how they label their mind or how they visualize their thoughts, it's giving them a sense of agency. It's giving them like, well, this works for me. I don't have to follow the rules for somebody else. And I find that works really, really, really nicely. There's a couple of things that I do, picked up in training courses over the years. One of which anyone who's familiar with ACT in any way will be familiar with, which is the visualization of your thoughts, visualizing thoughts as things. So to return to my earlier point, one exercise I do is to visualize yourself in a factory. You're on the production line and there's this conveyor belt in front of you with all your thoughts taking different forms, shapes, colors, whatever it might be. The temptation is to do something to each one. But in fact, if you keep your hands back, you can just observe them going past you. And of course, if you stop the conveyor belt, you'll cause havoc in the rest of the machinery. and everything will be about that. But if you just let it run, lo and behold, the thoughts move past you. Then you can move on to labeling them, not just observing them, but actually saying, what kind of a thought is that? And I think what's important here is not the evaluative approach. It's a good thought, bad thought, it's a nice thought. No, but that's a thought about the past. So that's just a memory. Well, that's a thought about the future. It's quite firm. I think that's a prediction, right? So instead of, is it true or not? Is it nice or not? We're saying, well, what kind of category is that? And with practice, we're able to say, hold on, that's upsetting, but that's just a memory. Or that's worrying, but it's a prediction. Okay, so what will I do given that's just a prediction? And there's a lovely image, although this doesn't travel very well, but there's a lovely image of the conveyor belt sushi restaurant, right? So where you're sitting at the conveyor belt and the sushi plates are going around. And I love this for a couple of reasons. One, it's bad form in a sushi restaurant to just take every plate that comes your way. Unless you're ravenous. What do we do? No, we look at it and ask ourselves, do I want that? And if it's something that we really like, and we want it in that moment, we take the plate and consume it. If we don't want it, what do? Well, we don't knock it off the conveyor belt. We just let it go and it goes off. Maybe someone else will take it. Maybe no one will. And this is the next reason I really like this. The conveyor belt is circular. The thought will come back. Remember, diffusion isn't about getting rid of them. If it's something like self-criticism, it's definitely going to reappear. But all you need to do is just keep your hands off the conveyor belt and it will pass by again. The third and final reason I love this image is that it's really bad form. So let's imagine we've got these plates coming towards us and all we can see is plate after plate of sea urchin. I think I hate sea urchin. I don't want sea urchin. Instead of letting it go past, it's very bad form to lean across, you know, tap the chef on the shoulder while they're preparing this and say, stop making sea urchin. Because you're not the only person who's going to be taking from this. So you can't dictate to the creator what they create, no more than we can dictate to our mind, stop giving me these memories. I don't want these memories. It doesn't work that way. We're expanding energy. We're upsetting ourselves. We're doing something that's not going to give us a good result. So it boils down to watching, observing, letting it pass if we don't want it, using it if we do want it. That's a helpful thought. That's an idea. That's a reminder. They're always helpful. And otherwise, we just keep ourselves to ourselves and acknowledge we can't control the conveyor belt and we can't control what appears on it. We can only control what we do when we spot that stuff. So that's the sushi conveyor belt restaurant metaphor. Expanded upon.
Blimey, that's the first time I've heard you present it in that form, Richard. Bloody love it.
Not everyone likes sushi. Not everyone likes those restaurants. But maybe there's another version we can come up with. But I think it works on a few levels.
It speaks to me so powerfully. I love it.
One final one I'll throw into the mix for a scenario. So visualizing your thought, labeling your thoughts, maybe taking the production line one a bit further and saying, well, look, if it had to go into a department, which department would this thought go in? Oh, the department of memories or the department of predictions, right? That's learning how to sort and label our mental content. But some of this stuff is a bit raw. Some of the stuff our mind gives us stings, you know, and is repetitive. So an example would be the self-criticism or judgment, you know, the stuff that goes right to the heart of us. The I'm not good enough. I'm not successful enough. I'm not a good parent. You know, those kinds of thoughts. So one thing that we can do is see them for what they are, which is repetitive stories. So imagine if you were at a big family gathering and your very boring cousin cornered you and started telling you in great detail about that summer holiday they had on the yacht in Greece again. Right? you do like this cousin. So you're not going to tell them to stop, and you're not just going to walk off. You can smile politely, but up here, he says, tapping his head, oh, I've heard this before. I don't really need to pay attention. And so it is with some of the stuff our mind gives us about us. You're no good. You'll never be successful. You're not a good manager. Yeah, I've heard this before, though, and it didn't help me. The last time, here's the story about success. Here's the I'm not good enough story. And that's a very different relationship to sitting with it, somehow processing it, or arguing with it, all of which takes us away from the present moment. Instead, it's just a story that pops up. And in fact, I don't have to go through the whole story. I'm not getting rid of it. I'm not fighting it. But I tell you what, I'm not giving it any more of my limited attention. I'm going to do something in this moment. And it's not going to be because of that story. It's just a story. And in my experience, people, when it's about self, find that really useful, because all you need to remember is we're telling ourselves stories constantly, if you think about it.
Lovely. And firstly, I'm flabbergasted that we're actually related, Richard. I never knew that. That's a new one, that we have the same cousin. That's my first observation. We'll say no more. I don't want to go into any details. The other one is I recognize sort of patterns or themes of thoughts as well. And I know this from people I work with. Those thoughts around procrastination.
Mm.
Oh, Ross, yeah, you could start that next year. Or, oh, you've missed. This is extreme because we're recording this at the end of January 2024. But, oh, I've missed the New Year's resolution slot, so I better leave it till next year. That's an extreme version. Typically, we'll say, oh, I'll start next week when I'm feeling a bit better. Or I'll start in March when I know the weather will be. So there's a big procrastination theme that can pop up for lots of people.
Absolutely.
And there's another one that pops up quite a lot is whenever I'm talking about self-care with a group and looking after themselves, taking those small moments for themselves to either recharge their batteries or do something that has meaning for them. And there's lots of stories pop up. You're being selfish. You've got other people to look after. You've got other work to do. It's always all about you, 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 you. Just crack on. And that comes up time and time again in people I work with. This feeling that kind of self-care is a bit weak or you're a bit soft-led.
And it comes full circle to this, how we treat ourselves about these thoughts. If we buy into them, we can feel very bad about ourselves. If we acknowledge our humanity, and everyone has thoughts they don't like, everyone experiences stuff like this, we're expressing a form of self-compassion, which is much more helpful. So instead of I should be on my game 24/7, I should be sharp as a tack, I should be maximum productive professional, no, everyone has off days, everyone has self-doubt. What's possible in this moment rather than all guns blazing? And your point about procrastination really fired me up there, because it's a huge topic in coaching. It's one that I work with a lot. And the way to deal with procrastination is not shouting at someone, just make a start. It's what is the thing you're trying to avoid? What's the thought about this that is giving you permission to avoid this? So you're trying to avoid some discomfort and you're buying into a story that tomorrow is a better day. We can just operate in the mental space first before we talk about techniques to organize yourself or prioritize. But at the very heart of it, you've noticed something about this task that you really don't like. It's filled you with dread and you're agreeing with the stuff your mind is giving you about delay is not a problem. You're buying into that. Even though you're a smart person and you know the delay is not going to help this at all. In fact, it could make it worse. So I really just make that point to demonstrate the generalizability of diffusion skills. They can help us in so many of the everyday challenges that we face. The principle is to use your creativity to see the thought as a thing rather than I am the thought. And the distance you can get from that and the whatever way you choose to do it, observe that thought, enables you to free yourself up from, as we said, the grabby, sticky nature of some of these thoughts and just do more of the stuff that you really want to do.
Lovely. Absolutely. I think you've summarized it beautifully there, and I'm tempted. I don't know whether now is the right moment, but I'm tempted to introduce the passengers on the bus.
I'd love that. Let's do it.
It's a metaphor that often lands quite well in groups, well, and individuals. But let me have a go at presenting it to you. So the idea is, folks, that you are the driver of your bus of life. And the moment you sit in that seat and turn on the ignition and start moving, there's lots of chatter starts up behind you. And that chatter, the passengers on our bus, we say they're like our thoughts. And they're clever, these passengers. They know what we're thinking before we even take any action. They know what we're thinking. So let me try and bring it to life a bit more. So we're moving along in our bus. Hopefully, we can go in a direction that has meaning for us, that has some importance and significance for us, and some of that deep down significance and meaning. And so we're moving along, and we're also thinking of doing something new in our life, taking a new avenue, maybe taking a right turn in our bus. And as I'm trundling along, some of the passengers are fairly mundane. They're saying to me, oh, when you go to the supermarket, remember we need to get bread and milk. And, oh, look, we've just passed the Mercadona. So it's just a bit of a running commentary about what's happening or thoughts that are popping into my head. Other passengers are saying, hey, Ross, love being on your bus. We think you're great. And we can see you're thinking of doing something a bit different in your life. Maybe you're starting to take a small step towards a new habit. And we think, go for it. We think you've got all the skills and the strengths needed, and we know it's going to end up in a great place for you. So mirror signal maneuver, Bonnie lad. Just go for it. And then there's some other passengers who are like, Ross, these seats are really uncomfortable on your bus. When was it built? It's really old-fashioned. And we can see you're thinking of taking this new avenue, doing this new thing in your life. Well, really? Because what we know, and you know deep down if you really think about it, is what we know is you like going on that circular route round and round the city where you feel really safe and everything's familiar. You might see other people taking new avenues, but that's not for you. Just keep going round and round. You know, deep down, that's where you feel most comfortable and safe. And then finally, there are some other passengers who are just awful. They're saying, Ross, have you got a license for this vehicle? Because you're such a shit driver. You're the worst I've ever experienced on this whole route in my whole lifetime of taking buses. You're the worst. And we can see you're thinking of taking this right turn. Well, really? Honestly? What are you thinking of? Because we know what's going to happen. We know there's going to be a series of unfortunate events ending in utter, utter catastrophe. So just pull over. In fact, just pull over. You're not even worthy to drive this bus. Just pull over and stop. And that, folks, was my attempt at presenting this metaphor of the passengers on the bus, which for me brings to life what it can be like having all these thoughts or passengers inside our heads, but also really represents the human condition for me.
It is a great metaphor, and I've seen it really resonate with people over the years. And of course, if you are driving a bus, the thing that's, you know, going to cause you problems is if you try and get rid of passengers by throwing them off the bus. You can't do that. You're a bus driver. And of course, the more time you spend looking in the rearview mirror and arguing with them, the less time you are focused on the task at hand, which is safely driving a bus. So the more time we get caught up with the nonsense our mind gives us, the less we're paying attention to what's right in front of us that we would ideally like to be doing. So that struggle. And I'd say everyone listening or watching has been on a bus at some time. So there's a very human element to this. We know what it's like to be a passenger. We know what it's like to have people distract us. We know what it's like to hear conflicting messages from different people. But when it's coming from inside, it just seems that more powerful. And yet the answer is not to argue with them. The answer is not to do what each one says, but instead to focus on where do I want to get to? And let me focus on driving rather than keeping all of these things happy. I really like it. It's a really nice metaphor.
Yeah. And I just want to go back to that tendency, because sometimes when I present this to people, they say, well, I've got my strategy. I know how I deal with this. I throw all the passengers off. It's just exactly as you said.
Yep.
And the way I would respond to that is, well, that might work in the short term. You might be able to throw them off the bus, but the evidence suggests that what they do, in metaphorical terms, is they put on a false nose and some bushy eyebrows, run down the road and hail the bus a few stops down, and they get back on the bus and wreak more havoc because they kind of got renewed vigor now they've been thrown off the bus. So that's what can tend to happen.
So hopefully we're making the point here that practicing these diffusion skills allows you to be super creative as long as you work within these principles of not struggling, not removing thoughts, and it frees you up to do more of this stuff that matters. Ross, I'd love to know how you practice it. What are the techniques you bring to life when you notice that it's helpful?
I think because I train a lot of other people and coach a lot of people in these concepts that I'm living them every day. And sometimes those thoughts, I don't catch them. And sometimes I notice they're starting to impact on me. So there's always a good place to start. You could even use that experience of a thought that's not particularly helpful as a prompt to go, ah, I'm on to you. So I like kind of thinking about them in flight. Another technique I love, let me give you an example, is say I've got a thought of I'm not clever enough, which comes up a lot for me. I'm not clever enough. If I notice that thought popping up as it does, I can put a phrase in front of it. I can put a phrase in front of it. People might like to try this at home. Is I'm having the thought that I'm not clever enough. So you see what I'm doing? I'm just adding that phrase. I'm having the thought that I'm not clever enough. And just replaying that in my head, just like a weight lifted off me. Personally, if I just practice this, it's, you know, you said it was like a menu of different techniques. This is one that really resonates for me, and other techniques will resonate with other people. This one really does resonate with me and lifts that weight of that thought. And you could even take it a step further and say, I noticed that. I'm having the thought that I'm not clever enough. And that even makes me smile because it feels like I'm actually getting more distance from that thought just by using language. So that's one of my personal go-to techniques, Richard. How about you?
So again, I'm in that space of training and sharing these all the time, and I try and start as simply as possible. But you know, if you've been doing something for a long time, you've got your own shortcuts or code words. So I've got a particularly geeky one that probably won't surprise anyone who knows me, but there's a wonderful, I should call it a graphic novel, but it's a comic series that really blew me away when I first read it. It's called Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. Beautifully illustrated, beautiful story, incredible depth to it. But there is a character in it that is a large panther-like cat. And all it can do is spot when one of the other characters is lying, and it just says, lying. And I've internalized that cat so that instead of maybe visualizing thoughts, or when I notice I'm getting thought up, I just go, thinking, that's just thinking, in what I imagine the cat's voice is. And it, oh yeah, that's just thinking. Hold on. Let me get back to practicalities or what I was planning to do. And one particular example that I use is with my predisposition to be wound up by other people in public. I'm judging, you know, inside. I don't say that out loud, but I say it to myself. Those thoughts are judging or deciding about other people when I don't know the whole story. I don't know why they're doing what they're doing. I'm judging. And that really frees me up to explore the situation I'm in with lots and lots of different perspectives and not be so judgy. So that's how I do it. And it's the same thing of just breaking that very powerful stream of thoughts that I might get drowned in. And they just go, no, that's just thinking. That's all you're doing. You're just thinking. And I found over time that works really, really well for me. But I don't think that's one that's going to necessarily translate around the globe, the lying cat, unless you were also a comics fan. But it can be as simple as an image like that.
Thanks, Richard. You know how we said we're learning from each other during this process? Oh, that's amazing for me. Absolutely love that. First of all, I want to read Saga. I want to check that out. But Lying Cat, when you described that as a voice, I really got this powerful auditory experience. Hearing that in a kind of Eartha Kitt voice, it's kind of like, Lying Cat.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm very skilled at my Eartha Kitt impression.
If I close my eyes, I can see her. But this is another example of treating it lightly, having a bit of fun with it, rather than I'm a terrible person for having these thoughts. It's just thinking. That's all this is. It's just thinking. And I always visualize that cat. It always just pops into my mind. And It can be something as simple as that, that can allow me to pivot in this situation and approach it completely differently. But I will say, we're sharing these examples not because we're perfect, not because we are totally skilled operators in life, but because we know how to do it and it can be useful to share how you actually bring it to life. That doesn't mean I never get caught up in thoughts. That doesn't mean you never have memories you don't like and spend too much time with them. What we are saying that once you practice them, it's less likely that you're unhelpfully getting grabbed and stuck in this mental content that isn't so nice. There's no perfection here. It's just working at it once you have the skills. So maybe shall we cover off a few brief pointers on what people could do from today immediately after this episode.
So see if you can try and adopt the position of just noticing your mind and what it's up to, because quite often these thoughts do their work, or do it, as Paul would say, my colleague Paul, they do a job on us at a level below our conscious level. And just by shining a light on them, we can then give ourselves that space and choice to decide whether we want to get tangled up in that or whether we want to pursue something that's more helpful in that moment, in that context. So for me, writing them down, as I've said, just seeing them out there on the page can be really powerful. And you might find that once you start writing down some of those thoughts, the pen just keeps going. And don't be alarmed if that happens, because that's kind of normal. And the other one I'd come back to is adding that phrase, having the thought. If you notice one of your everyday recurring and helpful thoughts. How about you, Richard? What would you recommend?
I mean, writing is very powerful, and I'm a strong advocate of keeping things simple. And if it fits on a post-it note, all the better. So writing a thought is just a thought. And putting that on a few post-it notes where you're going to see them, your monitor, your fridge, your bathroom mirror, to remind you, oh yeah, I'm always thinking, but a thought is just a thought. That can work really, really well. And remembering that when you are practicing your mindful awareness, your present moment presence, that you will notice thoughts. Learning that the noticing can be followed by a labeling of the thought, not any interference with the thought, and then followed by an intentional action. So I notice this thought I don't like, but now I'm going to pick up the phone and make that phone call I wanted to make. Or I notice that thought of self-doubt, and I'm going to put my hand up and ask the question. Right? So we don't have to get rid of the thought. We notice it, label it, and do the thing anyway. And this is all about freeing ourselves up to explore more options, not necessarily responding to each of these thoughts.
Beautiful. So hopefully that's resonated with folks, and you might want to have a go at some of these techniques. We'll make sure we do a like a nice summary of these techniques for you to access on the website.
I often get asked, when do you expect me to do this? You know, that's all very well, but I'm a senior something with a busy life and demanding. So here's the thing. Practicing these works really well, little and often. I'm not suggesting anyone sits for an hour at a time visualizing or labeling thoughts. And so the way I put it to my clients is to look for the moments in between. And what I mean by that is the moments when you're not doing anything else. You're waiting for a call to start. You're the only one on your team's call, staring at your own image on the screen. You're waiting for the kettle to boil to make your cup of tea. You're waiting on a train, a bus, a metro. You're waiting for the news to start on TV. There's those moments in between where you could just pause, notice what your mind is giving you, and label it. See what the thoughts are. And often you'll notice, oh, that's nonsense, or that's quite pleasant, or, interesting that I'm saying that to myself. But the more you practice this, the more you will have developed this muscle rather than needing it in the moment. We need to practice this when we're feeling good, when we're not constrained, so that we have the skill when it's going to be really, really helpful to us. So no need to block out hours. A moment at a time. I think I'm answering that unasked question because it's asked so frequently.
Lovely. So I wonder if we just give a tease, Richard. What are we going to cover next time?
Next time we're going to look at values. And I don't want to spoil it for everyone, but why are we looking at values in this order? Well, if we're practicing diffusion, if we're not letting some quite volatile thoughts or emotions dictate our behavior. If we're not doing that, what can we use to guide our behavior? And that's how we frame values, these qualities we want to bring to life, these direction-giving beliefs. So first of all, we need to figure out what our values are and then learn how to make use of them. And that's what we're going to do next time around, explore how to clarify and act on these values.
Beautiful. I can't wait. I'm on the edge of my seat already.
Looking forward to it. So in terms of this episode, you'll be able to find all the resources we've mentioned and more that we haven't. We're going to signpost you to lots of other stuff on the website for this series. And you can find that at worklifepsych.com/psychological flexibility. Please get in touch with your feedback about what we've been discussing today. We'd love to know, is it making sense? Are you able to put it into practice? Have we fluffed any of this? Any and all feedback is really, really welcome, especially if you have your own examples, if you have your own ways of doing this that work for you. We can all learn from each other. So that would be really, really nice. You can send us an email. You can email me, podcast@worklifepsych.com. You could email Ross, ross.peoplesoup@gmail.com. It doesn't matter who you email. We'll both discuss it and we'll reflect it in a future episode. So please, get in touch and let us know what you think. But for now, thank you so much for listening or watching. Ross, I'll see you next time.
Thanks so much, everybody. Bye for now.